For the first couple of years of my life after high school, I made most of my money working on one of the farms just outside of my town in Tennessee. Unlike a lot of the farms in the area around me that were typically horse and cattle ranches, the one that I worked at grew a lot of the fruits and vegetables that got shipped to the local grocery stores. At first, when I worked there, I mainly did manual grunt work. But after my second year, I got certified to drive some of the machinery around. And then finally, in my last year working on the farm, I was given the task that I always envied. I got to drive the combine harvester and begin bulk harvesting the crops. I'm not sure why, but this was always something I wanted to do. And the only time we ever got to use it was toward the beginning and middle of the fall. That year, it was finally my turn, and I couldn't have been more excited. I didn't even mind the cleaning that I had to do beforehand. You see, we had a major bird problem at the farm, so one of the many tactics we used to deter them was by placing scarecrows around the fields. And when we did that, we set them up so that we could break them down and move them when it came time to harvest, so that we didn't have to maneuver them around. This meant that before driving the combine harvester around, I had to go to each of the fields and remove the scarecrows and anything that we didn't want to get destroyed in the process. So the day before getting to the harvest, I spent most of my time breaking down the scarecrows. At first, everything was going well. The first couple of scarecrows broke down as easy as we had intended them to. But once I was more toward the middle of the field, I reached one that wouldn't budge. You see, we had designed it so that you could pull the post apart, and in the process, the hay stuffing scarecrow would fall down, and then we could untie them and drive them into the storage area. But for some reason, this one post wouldn't come apart. I took a closer look at the section of the post that we were supposed to pull apart, and to my surprise, it looked like this one had been super glued together. This was odd, but I ended up assuming that it kept falling apart, so the other workers secured it with super glue for the season. Boy, was I wrong. After a couple of frustrating moments of me trying to pull the post apart, I decided to just dig the center post out of the ground and then knock it over. As I began digging, I noticed that some of the ground around the post appeared to be a bit darker than the rest, almost like the dirt had been stained by something. I just wasn't sure what it was at the time. It wasn't until I got the scarecrow down that I figured it out. After digging, I pushed the post over, and the scarecrow came toppling down. I was surprised by the amount of force it sounded like when the scarecrow's body hit the ground. When we made them, I remember thinking that they were usually light, so I was curious as to why this one seemed so heavy. After further inspection, I quickly knew that I needed to notify the police. After walking over to the limp scarecrow, I could tell that something looked different about it. And as I began to move it around, I knew right away that this wasn't stuffed with hay. Underneath the sack that we used to make the head was an actual body. I called the police and notified my boss about what I had found. And oddly enough, my boss didn't respond. It wasn't long before the police arrived, and I escorted them to the scarecrow that I had suspected was a body. And after they checked it out, they confirmed that what I found was actually one of my old co-workers. There was one of our farmhands that got up and quit one day, or at least that was what we thought when he stopped showing up. But it turned out that he was murdered, and somebody had stashed his body among the scarecrows, hoping that he wouldn't have been found. The investigators said that they found multiple stab wounds in his back and torso, and they likely linked those to the cause of his death. What made things even crazier was that the investigators and the police weren't able to get in contact with my boss, and hasn't been seen since I texted him about the body. We found out later that the worker that was murdered was actually having an affair with our boss's daughter, and because my old boss couldn't be found, he is presumed to be the number one suspect in the murder, and they believe he is in hiding. If there is one thing that I took away from that job, is that a body is a lot heavier than it seems. I'll never forget the feeling of it in my hand as I went to check what it really was. In the tree trimming business, fall is probably our busiest season. Whether it's people who are afraid of dead tree limbs falling onto their homes, or those who just don't like the sight of them in their yard, the fall season is when all the calls come in, and we are usually spread the thinnest. This meant that, while I was working as a trimmer, in the fall, I was almost always on jobs by myself. And that was fine, but you can only take so many precautions and still get the job done when you are solo, which is why I'll never be able to work as a trimmer again. What happened was, I got sent out on a typical job that saw me removing some branches from a tree that were getting too close to one of the telephone poles in front of a homeowner's lawn. This typically wasn't a big deal. I would just harness myself up in the tree and then take my small chainsaw and start cutting away. So when I got to the job, I got all my equipment out, made sure that I was secured into my harness, and there was nothing directly below the tree that could damage by falling branches, and then I began making my way up the tree. I secured myself in the proper height, about 17 feet off the ground, and began figuring out which order I should cut the branches in. And once I got it down, I started up my chainsaw and began cutting away. I got through about 4 branches before I knew there was a problem. After the 4th branch fell, I felt a tug on my harness, and I figured it was loose. So I went to power down the chainsaw so that I could resecure myself. And just at that moment, the harness didn't slip, but it snapped. I was thrown backward and down from the tree. And on the way down, all I could think of was to throw the saw away from me because it was still running. Before I could do that though, my back slammed into one of the lower branches in the tree and the saw fell right out of my hand. I continued to fall, and as soon as I hit the ground, I knew that I was in trouble. I could feel the saw digging into my leg and tearing through my flesh as I literally laid on top of it. I tried my best to push myself up and roll over off the saw, but by that point, the damage was already done. I had never seen that much blood in my entire life. And it wasn't long after I separated myself from the saw that everything went dark and I passed out. Luckily for me, the homeowner was home and they actually rushed me to the hospital themselves. I woke up in the hospital bed with only 1.5 legs left. I had to get my right leg amputated from the knee down. The saw managed to cut through the bone and most of the flesh, but in a very choppy way that they couldn't reattach it. There was too much damage done. Surprisingly enough, I still work for the same company. Only now, I'm in the deployment department, and I make sure that everyone is fully equipped with good gear and multiple employees per job. Growing up in Chicago, you always hear about shootings, but you never expect to become the victim of one, especially not on your favorite holiday. But if there's something to learn from this, I hope it's that you always keep aware of your surroundings. You see, it was Halloween of 2013, and I was invited by my friend Peter to a party that they were having at one of the bars that we like to go to on our days off. It usually wasn't too packed with people, but on this occasion, it was the total opposite. As soon as we showed up, I wondered if we'd bitten off more than we could chew. Lucky for us, we got inside and the party ended up being a ton of fun at first. We both grabbed a couple of drinks and began socializing with people that we knew. The lights were awesome and the Halloween decorations were really well done. All in all, I started off having a really good time. That is until all of our attention was taken away from one another and turned toward the middle of what was supposed to be the dance floor. It wasn't clear exactly what was going on, but something had caused the band to stop playing music and the owner to turn the lights of the bar on. Sure enough, we both saw a couple of security guards making their way through the sea of people toward the center of the crowd, where it was now clear that a fight had broken out. We didn't really know the specifics, but all I saw was the security guards dragging one of the men out of the club, and he did not look like he was willing to go. He was kicking and fighting, trying to break free. He was also yelling some things that I couldn't quite understand over the music that had once again started up. I'll admit, after that incident, I felt a bit uneasy about staying at the bar. So after a moment, I began walking around looking for Peter, and when I found him, I let him know that I was going to catch a taxi home. He didn't like that I was leaving early, but he ultimately was cool with it. So I said my goodbyes to everyone and began making my way outside. The air was cold when I stepped from the inside of the club out onto the sidewalk, and I immediately began looking for any sign of a cab to take me to my apartment. That was when I noticed there had been one right down the road, so I figured I would see if they were available. I began walking down the sidewalk, and as I got away from the door, I noticed that there was a man smoking a cigarette against the side of the building. I couldn't be sure, but judging by the blood running down his face, I would say that he was one of the guys who had gotten into the fight. I made sure to keep to myself, in hopes to not starting any conflict or bothering an already upset and inebriated person. But sadly, that wasn't enough. It wasn't the man who was smoking's fault, but as I passed by him on the sidewalk, all that could be heard were the sounds of tires screeching, followed by four gunshots. As soon as the event was over, I knew that a drive-by shooting just occurred, and I began looking around to see where it took place. To my surprise, the man who had been smoking a cigarette was now keeled over, clutching at the side of his leg. And that was when I realized that the shooting happened right where I was standing. I looked down and noticed blood was starting to come from the shirt I was wearing, and I began feeling a burning sensation right below the left of my ribcage. I dropped to the floor thinking that my life was ending. But lucky for me and the other man, the bouncers right inside the door of the bar had heard the shots. They called 911 and they came outside and helped keep pressure on our wounds as we both lay there helplessly. At the end of the day, the police never found the shooter, but they were certain that it had to do with the fight that had broken out in the bar moments beforehand. It turned out that the other man who had gotten shot was involved in a gang, and because he wouldn't say who he was fighting with, and I didn't see anything, whoever shot us just got away with it. Our first Halloween in our new home was something that my girlfriend and I had been looking forward to. We had never lived in a suburb before, and therefore didn't usually get many trick-or-treaters. So we were excited to give out candy and see all of the costumes while we sat at home eating some candy ourselves and watching classic horror films. The night went great, and we honestly had more visitors to our door than we had initially expected. And by around 8 o'clock, we were out of candy. So we did what we were always taught growing up, and we turned out the porch light. This seemed to get the message across that we were out of candy, because for a few hours after that, we hadn't received any visitors. That is, not until we were getting ready for bed. It was around 11:30, and we had just finished watching Jeepers Creepers. And by that point, we were pretty tired, so we had decided to turn in. The two of us made our way down the hallway and toward our bedroom. And just as I was about to lay down, I heard a knock at the door. My girlfriend looked at me, and I just told her that they would probably go away if we didn't answer. That was when we heard the sound of knocking again, only this time, it seemed a bit louder. I decided that I should check it out, and I began making my way down the hall when I heard whoever it was at the door the third time. And this time I could hear them yell out, "Trick or treat," afterward. The strange thing was their voice didn't sound like children. It almost sounded like young adults at the door. So to be safe, instead of opening it, as I approached the door, I simply yelled out, "I'm sorry, we're all out of candy. I hope you have a good night," and thought they would just leave it. Boy, was I wrong. Out of nowhere, the knocking on the door turned into banging. And before I could even react, my girlfriend came running down the hallway yelling at me that she had seen someone trying to look into our bedroom window. I told her right away to call the police. As the loud banging on the door continued, I looked down at the lock to make sure it was secure, and then I began running toward the other door toward the back of the house to make sure that it was locked as well. I'm glad I did, because as I got to the door, I could see the doorknob moving as if someone were trying to open it. I yelled to whoever it was outside my house that the police were on their way, in hopes that my girlfriend had gotten a hold of them. Suddenly, all of the banging and slamming stopped, and there was silence outside of the house. I could hear the phone call from the other room and was reassured that police were in fact on their way. I walked toward the front of the door and began listening for anything that I could hear outside. When out of nowhere, I heard the sound of glass shattering as a large stone was thrown through our living room window. I ran right over to the window and looked outside, and I was able to see what looked like three grown men in various masks running toward the end of my driveway. I yelled out that the police are on their way, to which I was surprised that one of the men replied, "Don't worry, we'll see you soon." By the time the police arrived, all three of the men were gone, and they weren't anywhere to be found around the neighborhood. Thankfully, they never came through on their threat, and we never saw those three people again. As a child, like many of my friends, Halloween was my favorite holiday. Not only do you get to dress up as your favorite character, but you also get to walk around and get free candy. Things changed though, on the Halloween that came when I was only 11 years old. After that, I loved the holiday for the movies rather than the social aspect of it. You see, when I was growing up, the town that I lived in had a local orchard and pumpkin patch that would host a festival that would last the back half of October. For the most part, it was always a fun time. They had hay rides, games, pumpkin picking, and even a haunted corn maze. It was honestly one of the only cool things that my town did on a yearly basis. The best part of the festival was, of course, the last day of October, Halloween. That night, everyone wore costumes, and the orchard would run special sales and give out some free hot cider. It was hands down the most festive part of the season. That year I was dressed up as Leon from Resident Evil 4, and I couldn't have been happier with my costume. My family and I arrived at the orchard, and we all immediately split up. My dad went with my little sister to check out the petting zoo that they had, and my mom took my older two brothers and me over to the games to play around for a bit. The plan was for all of us to meet back up in time for the hayride, but before then, it was essentially a free-for-all. I was in awe as I walked around looking at all the costumes that people were wearing. There were some really cool ones, like the Flash and the other superheroes. And then there were some really creepy costumes that I tried to stay away from, like the clowns, or the giant spider costumes that someone was wearing. Surprisingly enough though, those weren't the scariest parts of that night for me. You see, it started when we were playing the festival games. We were at the booth where you need to throw the ball and knock down the stack of plastic pins, and it was my brother's turn to go, so I was basically just spending my time looking around at the different people and seeing if I could recognize anyone. That was when I first noticed him. There was an adult who was standing on the other side of the pathway near the restrooms. He was wearing a Michael Myers mask, and for some reason, it felt like he was staring right at me. I tried to point him out to my mother, but when she looked over, she told me that he was probably just waiting for his kids to come out of the bathroom. That sounded logical to me, so I stopped focusing on him and continued enjoying the festival. And after about 20 minutes of playing some games, we finally met up with my dad and little sister so that we could make it onto the hayride before things got too busy. We still ended up waiting in line, but it was only about a 5-minute wait. Sure enough, we all loaded onto a large carriage that was filled with hay bales to sit on and be pulled around by a large tractor. The hayride was typically a ton of fun because they would have workers in costumes scattered along the path that it would take, and their jobs were to scare us. That year didn't disappoint me. At least 3 times throughout the ride, I genuinely got scared, and by the time we had finished, my blood was surely pumping. And after that, there was only one thing left for me and my brothers to do, the haunted corn maze. We told our parents that we wanted to do it before leaving, and they reluctantly agreed since my sister was getting tired and they wanted to go home. But eventually, we were able to convince them. My dad told us as soon as we finished, we were to go straight to the car and where they would be waiting for us. And as soon as we got the okay, we all made a sprint for the corn maze. By this point, though, the maze was packed, and it was hard to keep track of where we were and who was who as we tried to make our way through it. I figured everything would be all right, though. Little did I know, I was putting myself in a very bad situation. As I navigated my way through the maze, I eventually hit a dead end, and when I turned around, I realized that I had lost track of my siblings. And if that wasn't bad enough, as I looked around the crowded maze for my two brothers, I noticed that I was being watched again. I was stopped dead in my tracks as I looked back through the maze and noticed that same adult in the Michael Myers costume looking directly at me. I began panicking as the man appeared to start walking toward me. I ended up turning around and running in the opposite direction. I continued to look over my shoulder as I tried to make my way through the maze, and I could tell that the man had begun moving faster and faster. And right as I was really about to start freaking out, I accidentally ran into someone. After bumping into this older woman, she turned to ask me if I was okay, and at that point, I was too afraid to get the words out, and I'm pretty sure she knew it. She told me that she was going to help me find my family, and for some reason, I trusted her. The woman helped me get out of the maze where I saw my brothers waiting for me. I explained what happened, and they thought I had just freaked myself out. The three of us made our way to our dad's car and got ready to head home. But as we were pulling out of the parking lot, I couldn't help but look back. To my horror, the man in the Michael Myers mask was actually standing in the entranceway, looking around the parking lot as if he was looking for me. I realized how close I was to being kidnapped the next day when the big news all over town was that a kid had gone missing from the Halloween festival. I told my parents what happened to me, and we made a statement to the police, but as far as I'm aware, they never found the child or his kidnapper. The last camping trip of the year is always a bittersweet feeling. It's sad because, as an avid camper, it's the last time I get to go camping for the next couple of months. But at the same time, it's a beautiful experience because by that time, the leaves have all fallen from the trees, and the air is nice and cool. Honestly, the middle of autumn is my favorite time to be out in the woods. It's just beautiful. That is, until all the noises come out at night. I'll never forget that last camping trip that I went on in 07. It was terrifying. For the most part, when I go camping, I tend to go with my younger brother, and sometimes our uncle would tag along. In 2007, the three of us decided to make our way from South Jersey up to the Schwangunk area of New York and went to one of the campgrounds that happened to be owned by a family friend. There were no cabins or anything on the campgrounds. It was simply a plot of land with a lot of forest on it that they would allow people to camp in as long as you paid for parking. We had only been to that area twice before, but this time was particularly awesome because, from the looks of the parking lot, we were the only ones camping that weekend. We unloaded our gear from the car and began what turned out to be about a 4-mile hike into the woods. After walking for about 2 hours, we found a little spot that we thought looked perfect for our campsite, and we began setting up. Now, typically, one of the best parts about camping is the peace and silence that you can find in nature. But during that time of year, you can't help but enjoy the sound of all the crunching leaves around you. But what makes the leaves really helpful is something that we learned that evening. The sounds can alert you when something is walking around near you. You see, after getting our tent set up, we quickly got a fire going and began making some mac and cheese and hot dogs that we had packed for our first meal of the weekend. And considering the fact that we were out there in the middle of October, the sun had already gone down by the time we had finished cooking our dinner. After eating our dinner, we all spent some time by the fire and then ended up deciding to head to bed early. Falling asleep outdoors was never an issue for me, and that night proved no different. My brother and I were in one tent, and our uncle was in his own, but it wasn't long before we could all most likely be heard snoring. I'm unsure how long I was asleep, but I remember waking up from a dream to the feeling of someone shaking me. I opened my eyes to see my brother, who had been sitting up and shaking me awake. When I looked over at him, he told me that he heard something outside. At first I was confused, but then I heard the sound that he was talking about. You could clearly hear the sound of leaves crunching under the pressure of someone or something's feet. I looked at my brother, who was visibly shaken from fear, and I tried to calm him down by explaining that it was most likely just our uncle using the bathroom, but he swore that he didn't hear him leave his tent. The sound of the leaves crunching began making its way around the outside of our tent, and I immediately figured that it was our uncle trying to scare us. So I called out to him, "Nice try," I said. "We aren't 10 anymore." But to my surprise, I heard my uncle groan from inside his tent as he was woken up by me talking. And I'm certain he must have heard the noises too, because he quickly called out asking if we were okay. Before I could respond to him though, we were both cut off by the sound of a deep growling noise. "Stay in the tent," my uncle yelled out to us, which he then followed up by making a lot of loud noises and banging his belongings around his tent to make noise. We could hear whatever it was outside running away from our camp, thanks to the leaves. And immediately my uncle got out of his tent and came into ours to check on us. He said that he thought it might have been a bear and that it shouldn't bother us anymore. And as if the bear was listening, all of us froze as we heard the footsteps once again closer to our camp. We all sat in silence as they began walking around our tent once again. And this time, the animal got close enough that my uncle and I could hear its breathing through its nose as if it were sniffing the side of our tent. Whatever it was stayed at our campsite for about an hour, circling our tent before it finally ran off. The three of us ended up waiting until sunrise and then decided that we needed to leave. We quickly packed up everything that we had and began walking back to the car. My uncle had a can of bear mace that he was carrying in his hands, but thankfully, we didn't run into anything on the way back to the car. We did, however, spot a set of massive tracks about halfway up the trail that we assume could only have come from the bear that we encountered the previous night. They seem fresh too, and considering hibernation season was coming up, we are lucky that it wasn't looking for food at that particular moment.